I'm constantly amazed at the capacity of art to take us its own way, to take us into it, to make us experience what it experiences, to take us out of the midwinter rains into the drought of summer and confirm it there under its own space and dimension. I always find poetry a little shocking from that regard, its power and capacity to possess us. I suppose that's why the poet gives himself to it, to, in order to sustain just such transformations. It's a kind of liberation, a way of securing freedom. Here it is. Brace yourself. Cutting the fire break. This one goes back to the springtime when all the flowers are dancing and the grass is green. But you know the drought's going to come and the work has to be done. But you don't know what it's going to lead you into or expose what part of yourself that you had not. One of those things you had thought hidden back there before the great tree trashed out. One of those discreet and prudent reservations that you hide even from yourself. Mowing the east field under the ridge, I weighed the wind. The bent rib scythe found rusting in the barn swings in the sun. The ancient blade of my wife's great-grandfather, drawn from the dust of 70 years, riots in the grass. They don't make 'em like this old gull anymore, cackled the smith, hunched above his spectral grindstone, shouting across the howl of iron and the fleer of sparks. He paused, spat on the blade, wiping off rust. In the sudden silence, the wedding band he wore on his finger chimed fine steel. Cocking his head like a listening bird, he snatched up a file and rapped again. Hear that hum in her spine, that tone when she shivers? He barked harsh laughter. Old-timer's got a name for it. Turning, he cut the power, stepped down from the bench. They call it the moan of death. And that hunger vibrates up the crooked stalk as the grass reels. I feel it hum in my arm, stroke on stroke. It sings in my shoulders. My collarbone rings to the pulse of it, the ravenous steel, and I swing with it, made one with it, wheeling among the standing fern, goat-footed, trampling tall bracken, ruthless, the radiant flowers, iris, wild orchid, leopard lily, the flush and shimmering splendor of life. And then the honing, whetstone and steel kiss each other. They crave it so. They lick their lips greedily together like reckless lovers or as the whore mouths the man. I have to pull him apart. The man sighs, hisses in the vetch, a snake denied, moans in the air. Oh, the grunt of lovers biting each other, stroke on stroke coupling through hell. It makes the sex growl in my groin to call them down, wild iris, lily, the moan and the shudder. All the women in my life sprawled in the weeds, drunk in death. Where do such things come from? Eros and Thanatos, they say, that death always wakens the Eros factor in the soul of man, the spirit of renewal. I'm going to go back to another. I have another poem over there from an earlier number that came to mind. And I won't need to explain it at all. A rustle of whispering wind over leaves. Then the stillness closes. No creek music, no slurred water sound. The star stream edges its way through dead stones, noiseless in the night. I feel your body restless beside me. Your breathing checks and then resumes, as in a moment of dream the glimpsed image, mutely desired but scarcely believed, fades and revives. In the long drought, impotence clutched on the veins of passion encircles our bed, a serpent of stone. I sense the dearth in you also, the bane that is somehow mine to impose, but yours to endure. Cohibition of the blood, flaw of nature or defect of the soul, dry turning of leaves, cessation of desire, estrangement gripped in the roots of hair, and around the loins like a fine wire, the cincture of nerves. I think of the Fisher King, all his domain parched in a sterile fixation of purpose, clenched on the core of the burning question gone unasked. Out in the dark, the recumbent body of earth sleeps on, silent as dust, incognizant. Many a moon, many a withering month will she weary, ere the black night of storm whirls out of the west, churns from the turbulent foss of the sea, assaults the shore, breaches the continental slope, and takes her, his torrential force stripping the iron zone of chastity down from her thighs, drenching belly and breast, all the pores of her famished body agape. Oh, wife and companion, the ancient taboo hangs over us. The long suspension tightens its grip on the seed of my passion and the flower of your hope. Masks of drought deceive us. An inexorable forbearance falsifies the face of things and makes inflexible the flow of this life, the movement of this love. What prohibitive code stiffens the countenance, constricts the heart? What fear constrains it? And who's the blame? Enough. There's no need now, nor ever was, for the ghastly road of self-accusation, scrupulosity enjoins, to find a new mate. Were nothing difficult for one so young, so lovely. But something other, more inscrutably present, obtains here, possessing us, cohesive in spirit, divisive in the flesh. The lordly phallus never again to joust in the festive lists of love, quench its ardor in the uterine fens, assuage your cry. Myth and dream merge in a consanguinity of kind, fuse the soul's wild wish and the hunger of the race on the body's pang. But something forbears. Like Merlin and Ninianni, bound in a faithfulness that set them aside, wisdom and delight crucified in bed, polarized on the stretched extreme that made them one, we twist our grievous fingers together and stare in the dark. I hear quaking grass shiver under the windowsill. And out along the road, the ripe mallow and the wild oat rustle in the wind. Deeper than the strict interdiction of denial or the serpentine coiling of time, woman and earth lie sunk in sleep, unsatisfied. Each holds that bruise to her heart like a stone and aches for rain. You write your way through your crises. It can't solve them, but it can keep you sane.